Prince. As was announced, the subject of our lecture today is astrology, science or fraud. If on the one hand, if we find that there has been an upsurge in the interest and also belief in fields of mysticism, psychic phenomena or astrology, on the other hand, there has always been a select group of people who've not believed in this, and therefore they've tried to curb this sort of credulity. In 1975, in America, a statement was published in a magazine under the title Objections to Astrology. And this was signed by 186 eminent scientists of that time, including many Nobel Prize winners. And their objection was that, yes, astrology is no better than a folklore or a superstition. Ancients believed in the influence of planets and stars and all that on human destiny and affairs of the earth. But ancients regarded celestial bodies as abodes of the gods. And so it is no better than a superstition. But now, as it were, we are more enlightened, with science making discoveries of distance of various planets from each other, distance of the planets from the earth. So it is evident that, leave alone any other effects, even the gravitational pull that any planet can exert on earth is merely negligible. Now, Carl Sagan, we are all familiar with that name, is supposed to have written that book Cosmos, talking a lot about astronomy and planets and all that. He was the one who said he would not sign the statement, and he pointed out that it is not as if I believe in astrology, but if the statement made was something which pointed out that what are the principal tenets of astrological beliefs which are wrong, which are refuted by science, if these were described, then maybe I would have signed the statement. Otherwise, a priori rejection, saying that the whole astrology is no better than a superstition, without, as it were, even putting forward any points, it doesn't really appeal to me, because then the scientists would be regarded by those who believe in astrology as people who are having closed minds. And that's what, when Einstein's theory was rejected, not really rejected but opposed, what people did was some 100 professors had gathered in a hall, and they opposed his theory almost on emotional basis. And Einstein only remarked that, were I wrong, even one professor would have been enough. So number doesn't matter. It's what is important is, have we examined the thing? As Herbert Spencer says, that the greatest bar to knowledge is contempt before examination. That you contempt, you have sure contempt, but don't examine it. And also, as we often repeat, HPB quoting from Narada, that even never utter these words that I do not know this, so that it does not exist, that it is wrong, because one must study to know, know to understand, and understand to judge. Now, if we find that on one hand there is this extreme view taken by the non-believers in astrology, on the other hand, the believers in astrology also go to the extremes. They say that planets, stars, etc., not only influence, they, as it were, completely determine the destiny of man. And astrologers and astrology is so powerful that they can actually, as it were, propitiate the evil stars and somehow change your destiny in some way. Now, between these two extremes, HPB says, is to be found the truth. And this gives rise to the fallacy, two fallacies. One, it makes us feel that, well, we don't have any free will. When we are born, everything is predetermined, predestined. Secondly, it makes us feel that the nature's laws are some playthings. You can cause them to deviate according to your whim and fancy. Some astrologer, somebody can bring about the deviation in the laws of nature. Now, both of these things, we will see, is not true. And so she says that the real philosophy always tries to, as it were, examine and not accept nor deny. She calls or describes astrology in the pink leaflet. She says, astrology is a science as infallible as astronomy itself, with the condition, however, that its interpreters must be equally infallible. And it is this condition, sine qua non, so very difficult of realization, that has always proved a stumbling block to both. Elsewhere, she has called astrology a mathematical science. Now, if we go back a little, we find that Pythagoras, who lived in 580 BC, a great mathematician as we know him, was also one of the leading advocates of study of astrology. And a little later, one of the, in the modern world, if we see, the scientist Kepler, who tried to prove his theory of music of the spheres, he was one other person also who believed in validity of the field of astrology. Plato and Aristotle also believed in the influence of planets and stars. In fact, Plato is supposed to have said that there are planetary gods, and the origin of our souls is from these planetary gods, and to them they return back. Theosophy has something definite and different to say on this. So also we find that it was in a work called Astronomica, as far back as in 14th century AD, that surprisingly some poet has written that work, and he pointed out that there is a correlation or a connection between various organs in the body and various planets and various zodiacal signs. Later on, it was Paracelsus, who, the great physician, who perpetrated this theory, and he said that yes, the principal organs in man's body, they do have a link and a correspondence with planets and various astrological signs. In any exoteric book, we find they will give a whole chart that Scorpio rules generative organs, Aquarius rules the ankles, Leo rules heart, right or wrong, but the correspondences are shown. So also, he was the one who pointed out something very important, that the planets, stars, etc., they are having influence, but the heavens only corresponds to earthly events. It doesn't determine it. No planet or a star really suggests or determines anything. It would be absurd to say that it is the stars which make a man. Now, something which we are going to go much more in detail a little later. But we can see the same idea which is, put forward even earlier on in the study of astrology. Now, astrology, if you look at the history, it is simply, the name is derived from the two words, which means the message or the wisdom of the stars. And in the glossary, if we see, astrology is the science which defines the action of celestial bodies upon mundane affairs and claims to foretell future events from the position of the stars. Its antiquity is such as to place it among the very earliest records of human learning. So it's a very ancient science. And in the work by H.J. Eisenach, he's written a book on astrology, again trying to find out whether it is science or a fiction, he is pointing out that it dates back to the time of old Babylonian civilization. And that in Babylonia, and as we see, it's a long note on astrology, it is said that that time there was no distinction made between astronomy and astrology. The two sciences, as it were, coincided. Not only that, they used to use planets and stars for what is known as the omen prediction, or for reading omens. So there will be things like, if the first day of the month is not an Amavasya day, then that month the country will be peaceful. Or if there is a halo around the moon scene, then the king will prosper. So the planets were used for omen prediction. Not only that, HPB has something definite to say about the whole art as was practiced in Babylonia, where she points out that there were Babylonian towers, and wherein there used to be certain priestesses, and these priestesses would sleep on the topmost floor of that tower, so that they can remain in communication with the gods and goddesses. And they used to make use of what is known as aerolites. aerolites are the meteorites, what we understand in the modern terms. It's a chip or a block of matter from the space which falls on Earth. And then there used to be, they used to put these stones against the forehead and they would be able to divine the future, tell about the future. This is, of course, the art of psychometry, that if you give a person who knows this art of psychometry a ring or a thing which was worn by the person, he can tell you about past, present, future of that person. So this is the method in Babylonia it was used. And not only that, she says, surprisingly, in Egypt, in Chaldea, in Samothrace, also these aerolites were used for telling about the future events, and very little astronomical instruments were in use. They used to consider these aerolites as the souls, as it were, of the things in heaven. Now, it is said that it is through these Chaldees, etc., etc., finally this art came to Greeks, the whole art of astrology. And the Greeks were the ones who placed a lot of emphasis on what is called as the rising sign. We are all mostly familiar that in the horoscope you have the ascendant or the rising sign, or what we call in Hindu this thing as lagnam. That's something which the Greeks used to a great extent. And in fact, it is said that the term horoscope it has its derivation in the Greek word horoscopus, meaning I watch that which is rising. So that's how it has come. And if we look at glossary, now of course they have made many more divisions. But it says that the horoscopy itself is divided into four parts. There is the mundane horoscope, which is the horoscope regarding meteorology, seismology, husbandry. Then there is the state or civic horoscope, which tells about the fate of nations and kings. There is the horary astrology, we know, that tells you, if you ask a question, depending upon at what point you have asked the question, they will solve your doubts which are in your mind. And then there is the genethiliacal horoscopy, which is the horoscopy that we are more familiar with. You cast the horoscope and you tell about the future. Now, this casting of the horoscope itself, we know how it makes use of the date, time of birth, as well as the place of birth, the longitude, latitude, etc. Now, here, once again, if we turn to H.J. Eisenach's book on astrology, he points out how even the scientists are finding some grey areas in astrology. One of the things they talk about is that when you cast the horoscope, the method of casting varies from place to place. And of course, there are two different methods. In effect, they say there are two zodiacs. We won't be able to go into all of it, but they talk of tropical zodiacs and they talk of sidereal zodiac. And at one point in time, both these zodiacs coincided. But there is something called precession of equinoxes, whereby the two zodiacs are out of step with each other by one sign. That is around 23 degrees they counted. Of course, each sign is 30 degrees, but around that much. So when the eastern people, they take into account sidereal zodiac, the western take into account tropical zodiac, and you can see that if you have cast a horoscope using the eastern method, you have to add 23 degrees of ionances in order to arrive at the western method of casting the horoscope. Now, we can see that depending upon eastern method, your sun may fall in Capricorn, but you add 23 degrees and it may fall in Aquarius. And then all the planetary positions, signs, etc., etc., will change considerably. And what happens to the interpretation? Be quite different if you go by eastern and western methods. So there itself, we find that lots of discrepancy is there. Not only that, then there is this thing about the time of birth. Ptolemy, who is supposed to have started the modern astrology, he thought that the time should be taken as the time of conception. Some of them feel that it should be just the time of birth, when the child really is born. Some feel that it should be the time where the baby first cries. When the baby gives a first cry, it inhales the cosmic influences, various things. So again, the time itself and determination of the exact time also is a little doubtful thing. Now, we won't go into lots of objections which are raised, but this is what we find. Now, horoscope we find, again, if we see that there are these planets, then the planets, they make certain aspects or angles with each other. All this is seen, and then it is determined what is the influence of these planets on that person, etc., etc. Now, the fundamental question that arises is that do planets really have an influence on human beings, human destiny, and also various things that happen on Earth? Now, H.P. Blavatsky, in one of her articles, points out that we talked about the planets and aspects of planets. Now, what is that? When, say, two planets are as viewed from the Earth, when they are 180 degrees apart, they are said to be in opposition. If they make 90 degrees, they are said to make opposition. They are said to be in opposition. If they are 90 degrees apart, they are squaring, 120 degrees, then trine, all that is there. But if there is 0 degree, that is no angle is made, we say that they are in conjunction. Now, HPB says that when two planets are in conjunction, it's a rare thing. Three planets being in conjunction is rarer, and five planets being in conjunction is the rarest thing. She quotes in one of her very enlightening articles that once only 2449 BC, five planets were in conjunction, and that was the time when Chinese astrologers observed and they predicted, as it were, the great disaster for China. And 500 years hence, it was found that there were lots of social upheavals, internal wars, and almost the golden period for China came to end. So also in 1563 AD, she says, there were three planets in conjunction, Mars, Saturn, Jupiter, and that again had no good forebodings, as it was found that the entire Europe was covered by a massive plague in which thousands and thousands of people died. Now this is what HPB is writing of the things which happened so many years back. And of course, she wonders that why do we not believe that planets can have influence on us? Now, even before we go further into what theosophy has to say, let's see what science has to say on this. There's a whole branch of science called cosmobiology. And in cosmobiology, they study this very thing, the effect of planets and stars on human fate, human destiny, not human fate and destiny, sorry. They study the effect on the events taking place on the Earth. And someone, a Russian historian, spent a lot of time studying the data covering 72 countries and from 600 BC onwards. And he found that whenever there are sunspots, there is a sunspot activity going on, it produces a lot of social upheaval, revolutions, epidemics, and so on. Now, sunspots, we know, they are the areas in the sun with a very high magnetic density, and it emits out certain radiations and charged particles which can cause bad weather conditions. Also, high frequency radio wave, radio signals also, they go out of order. All these things happen. It was also found, a study conducted showed that 8% rate, there was an increase of 8% in the suicide rate also when there was the sunspot activity going on. Now, another person, the radio engineer, someone called John Nelson, thought that the sunspots themselves are the result of certain positions of the planets. So what he did, that on a particular day in 1940, 23 March, there was a complete failure of a high frequency radio signal. And at that point, he studied the ephemeris, the almanacs, the panchanga as we say, and he found that the planets were having certain positions. For example, say Mercury was in opposition to say Saturn and Mars, or Venus with conjunction of Pluto, and lots of positions were there. He continued these observations and he found that whenever there was the radio signal failure, more or less these were the positions of the planets. And this, in a way, says Professor Eisenach, is an indirect support of science to the astrological belief that after all, the planets do affect the events on Earth, and they affect through various aspects, that is through these various angles that they make with each other, the earthly events are affected. Now, as for the planetary influences, we are told in Theosophy, one of the very simple and easy but enlightening article by Robert Crosby on planetary influences points out that yes, planets do have influence on not just this thing, not just the affairs of Earth, but also on human beings. Before that, let's see what HPB has to say. She's also put forward certain data, concrete data. She says that the Earth is very seriously affected by what takes place in the sun. A connection is strongly suspected between epidemics and appearance of the sun's surface. One of the best known vegetable epidemics is that of the potato disease. The years 1846, 1860 and 1872 were bad years for the potato disease, and those years are not very far from the years of maximum sunspots. Surely, the destiny of man deserves as much consideration as that of turnip and a potato. And if a disease of the latter may be scientifically foretold, whenever the vegetable crops out during the sunspots period, why should not a life of disease or health, of natural or violent death, be as scientifically prognosticated by the position and appearance of constellation with which man is as directly connected and which bears the same relation to him as the sun bears to the earth? So here is what she says, that is extended beyond and apply it to man. And yes, you will find that the planets do affect even the human destiny. Now, Mr. Crosby, in that article we referred to, mentions that how a man, we know, is not just his physical body. He's more than that. There is the astral body, there is his mind, there is his passional nature. So also, Theosophy says that the planets that we see are only the physical orbs, only the physical aspect that we see. But then there is also something intellectual to them, something spiritual to them, something astral to them. And not only that, behind every orb that we see, there is a divine intelligence. Call it a regent, a rector, planetary spirit, what have you. And Mr. Crosby points out that our present astrology, as it is known, deals only with personality of man, only with the physical life. Whereas the true astrology deals with much more, even the spiritual and psychical aspects also. Now, the sun, as we know, the giver of life, light, heat, etc., it is giving, but depending upon the position of the planets, not all planets receive the same amount of heat and light from the sun. Depends on the distance from the sun and the position. So also, moon is supposed to be affecting. We know it affects the weather, it affects the tides in the ocean, it affects the fertility in women, it also affects the insanity. We are told that a mad person becomes more insane during certain phases of the moon. Now these things are observed. So, I mean, from the known we can go to the unknown. I mean, there is hardly any room for doubt as far as the planetary influences are concerned. And this is what he points out. He makes three important points in this second quotation. He says that we are influenced by other planets just as we are influenced by other people in our daily walk in life. All have their direct effect upon us. The influence of one planet predominating over another in accordance with the angle or position, it is not the condition nor the circumstances but the attitude we hold towards them which matters. The fact that at any given time or place we are subject to certain beneficial or malevolent influences, that we are born as persons at a certain time and place under certain conjunctions of planets, means only fulfillment of karmic law. Planetary influences express our tendencies, yes, but there is no God about to compel us. There is no possibility of our being pushed into following certain wrong tendencies unless we want to be pushed. If we have made up our mind not to be influenced and then we cannot be, so we can make another kind of birth possible. Three important things are there. One, first of all, he says that how can the planets influence you? And here Mr. Judge's answer is very suitable. Once somebody asked him that, do planets influence us? And he gave the example that he knew a man who was otherwise very good, but he said that only he believed too much in astrology to the extent of predicting every next day what is going to happen to him. He would just have it ready that this is going to happen to me according to the chart. Now, as it happened, there was again the conjunction of the planets, and he worked it out that that means he is going to have his leg broken. Now, doing this, he remained at home. And he remained at home and his wife, however, told him that you put up the curtains. So he climbed up to put up the curtains on the ladder. The ladder gave way, he fell and broke his leg. Now it may sound that, oh, what a wonderful, he even could tell that he's going to break his leg. But Mr. Judd says no. He says that it was, no doubt, the conjunction may have shown very, very bad influence. But what precipitated that influence? It was the special attitude of this person that precipitated that influence. And he says that we cannot attract anything that we do not think about. That whatever thoughts we have, there is a consubstantiality of thought and influences. That if you have certain thoughts, similar things you attract towards yourself. So he gives another example, that this special attitude works also with animals. Just to drive home the point very clearly, he gives the example of a little mongrel dog. That he was walking in a street and he saw a mongrel dog walking on that side. Now this little dog was walking on fine. Then he saw that on the other side of the street, there were 5-6 huge dogs playing, of course not even looking at him. They were just playing together. But this fellow got frightened. He put his tail between his legs, started walking slowly, looked behind, sat down, again got up, again walked slowly, and finally he did succeed, as it were, in attracting the attention of these dogs. And when they saw him like this, they made a rush towards him. Now Mr. Judd says that, just imagine, what really precipitated that event? The dog, his fear. He paid so much attention, he got so frightened, he could have quietly walked on and they wouldn't have noticed him. But he precipitated the thing. So, just through these examples, he shows that it is, the influences are there, but whether we would be influenced by it or not depends upon us. Not only that, when he talks of planetary influence, he says that it's not just the planets, but the heavens as a whole. And by the heavens, you mean planets, stars, and all the heavenly bodies, which is known as the ambient. The whole of the ambient is something which affects the person, and planets are only the foci. They are only the focal points, they are the indicators, pointers, which describe what is going to be the influence of the whole of the heavens on a particular man or earth or whatever it is. So let us remember that these planets are only indicators. Not only that, it is not just the planets. He says that the astrologers forget the influence of certain very powerful stars, which must be taken into account. That there are certain powerful stars, when they have a rule, like for example, one certain powerful star had a rule, it was when the London was burning. One other time, a certain powerful star had its rule, at that time, the Napoleon's downfall is what happened. This is what Mr. Judge points out, saying that the attention should even be paid to these stars. Now, as for these planets then, we said they are indicators. And the example given is that of a clock. But the planets are like clocks. A clock can indicate time. But can a clock change time, influence time? No. Only a human being can. If you are going from India to America, you can adjust your clock to, as it were, suit the time which is there in America. But the clock cannot change the time. The astrologer, he says, is like the clockmaker. If you tell a clockmaker that it is 3 o'clock, then he will be able to tell you that the small hand will be at this position, the long hand at this position. Not only that, he can even tell you where certain cogs, wheels, etc. inside the clock will be if you tell him that the time is 3 o'clock. In the same way, it is true also of the astrologer. He is no better than a watchmaker or a clockmaker, and none of them actually influence time and therefore influence the destiny of man. Destiny, what is destiny? We are told that we have sown certain causes in our past lives. And so when we are born with these, some part of these causes, and which determine that this and this is going to be the results that we are going to undergo in this particular life, depending upon the causes which we have set up in the past lives. So all that these planets do is to indicate that this is going to be the precipitation of the causes, and therefore this man is going to have this, that and the other kind of fate. Mr. Judd goes to the extent of saying that the stars are inextricably linked with the karma of the man. And if you have reached a state where you are not making any more karma, then the stars are not there for you. That is to say that they have nothing to indicate for you because you don't have any karma made. So it is all that they do is just tell you, as Mr. Crosby says, it is all fulfillment of the karmic law. The person, astrologer, astrology, what it is doing is just telling you that yes, this is the cause, and I mean, depending upon the causes, this is going to be the effect that you are going to reap. Now, in a little more technical manner, this, why it is possible at all to tell anything about the future is shown by HPB in this quotation that we are inextricably linked, that there is one life which is connecting the human beings, the stars, the planets, the heavenly bodies, and therefore we are continuously affecting each other. Our thoughts are vibrations and they are impinging upon Akasha and the various planetary bodies, and therefore it becomes easy to tell what is going to happen, and there is nothing extraordinary about it. This is how she puts it in the third quotation, that it is a well-known principle of occultism that the one life which pervades all connects all the bodies in space. All the heavenly bodies have thus mutual relation which is blended with man's existence, since he is but a microcosm in the great macrocosm. Every thought, as much as action, is dynamic and is impressed in the imperishable book of nature, the Akasha. All our thoughts and vibrations thus produce vibrations in space which mold our future career. The position of the planets at the time of birth of an individual, which event is aggregate result of the causes already produced, that why there is certain the planets are in a particular position and no other, is because of certain causes, aggregate causes, not only of one person but the whole of humanity and the whole of earth and all the other beings together. Because of these causes the planets have that position, gives true astrologer the data on which the base on which to base his prediction. Now, having said this, of course there remains this whole thing about the prediction. Now, an HPV says that first of all, this science is incomplete. Astrology, as we know, it is only dealing with the personality and the physical aspect. That it is an incomplete knowledge. Secondly, as we had seen earlier, it is infallibility of the predictions, etc., will depend upon the infallibility of the astrologer. So a lot depends upon how the interpretation is made by the astrologer. Not only that, we can see that it's a very, very complex mathematical science. If you look at the horoscope, we are told that one planet, you have to first see in which sign it is, then in which house it is, then what are the aspects it makes to all the remaining. Actually, there are 7 planets, but now you have 9, 10 planets. So how many aspects it makes to that? And similarly, we have to see the aspects of each of these planets with the remaining planets. Now, how many permutations and combinations it will give rise to? So it requires something more than mere mathematical acumen. As again, in that book that we have quoted, he gives the example that somebody actually sent the data of 10 criminals and who were to be hanged in 1 or 2 days. And it was sent to the computer firm which was claiming that it can really cast a horoscope through a computer and make exact predictions. And the computer horoscope was like produced, and the predictions were quite haywire. Nothing of the sort was said that these people are going to be killed tomorrow. They were going to be hanged, and totally different things came out. So you see, if it was just a matter of mathematics, computers are supposed to be quite very, we consider them powerful and all that. So some very good programmer can take into account the aspects and do it. But no, something more is required. And that's what HPB says, that beyond that, a little bit of the psychic vision, what we can call as the intuition on the part of the astrologer, which can penetrate through these various combinations and come to the correct conclusion as to what is going to happen. And this is what all that she brings out in the next quotation that we have, that an element of clairvoyance is necessary to constitute a true astrologer. The ancient rishis had, by observation, experiment and deep occult knowledge, taken account of all conceivable combinations of various causes and determined with mathematical precision, almost to infinitesimal point, their effects. But, yet, even the rishis, she says, that even they with their penetrating glance of having that intuitive knowledge, still, but yet, since the cosmos is infinite, no finite being can ever take cognizance of all the possibilities of nature. All the possibilities of nature. First condition of success in astrology is a pure life, physically, mentally, and spiritually. That's what is required. And we find today so many of the astrologers, they just do it for money. That's the very first drawback of any spiritual art, that you are not supposed to charge. That's the first thing. Not only that, where is that pure life, which is mentally, physically, spiritually? That is required. And that's why we find that there are very rare predictions which are so true. Now, this was intended to develop psychic capacities of the astrologer, who could thus see in Akasha the combinations not alluded to in the written works and predict their results. True astrology teaches us what particular causes produce what particular combination, and that gives us means to obtain knowledge how to guide our future births. Now, this at once shows that it's not surprising then that why it appears to be both science as well as fraud. It is science, yes, no doubt it is a science, that some bit of that scientific temper, as it were, is retained in the knowledge we have, but it's a fraud because it's an incomplete thing, and on the other hand, it is they are not able to predict out things properly because they themselves lack the required kind of purity and all the requirements. They are not fulfilled by the astrologer. Now, besides this, of course, we must know when we say that it is an incomplete science, even if you take exoterically, affecting the physical aspects in man, it is incomplete. But what about if it is considered as such a great science, what about its esoteric aspect? If you see, there is exoteric astrology, but there must be something like esoteric astrology. If the rishis and sages were interested and were studying, and somebody like Plato and Pythagoras talked about it, there must be something more to it than the astrology that we know. Now, we won't be able to go much into it. If people are interested, the Secret Doctrine is the book in which a lot is said about what exactly on a different plane this astrology, planets, etc. may signify. But we'll just touch upon two things. One is the very zodiac. Zodiac, we know, is nothing but the path of the sun in the heavens. That is the track or the belt, which is the zodiac, and it is divided into 12 imaginary parts, 12 imaginary divisions, which is termed as the zodiac signs, and each division has got certain constellation, that is group of stars. Now, it is said that earlier on there were only 10 zodiac signs, and later on, if we look at the article by T. Subbarao in a book called 5 Years of Theosophy, he points out, and also HPB in Isis Unveiled says, that later on 2 esoteric signs had to be added, and for this, as it were, one sign was split up into 2. There was a grouping together of Virgo, Scorpio, which was split separately into Virgo separately and Scorpio separately, that made 11 signs, and a new sign, Libra, which did not exist, was added, and thus they were hiding by doing this the 2 esoteric signs which were added to the 10 signs, and we have 12 signs. Not only that, Subbarao points out in his article that are these really signs which are represented by the various animals, like you have Aries, Mesha, that is the ram, or you have bull or Taurus. People think that it is as simple as representing the shape of the constellation, that the stars are arranged in the shape of a bull or a shape of a ram, that's why these names are given. He says no, ancients knew that stars, although you call them as fixed, they are called fixed because they are so slowly moving, so relatively fixed, so we call them fixed, but they are moving. And this shifting group of stars are going to change the shape. So it's not going to remain the shape of a ram or whatever. But there was some more significance to these names which are given. First of all, he says that these names, the whole of the zodiac, she says that as H.P. Blavatsky points out, it has 7 meanings. You can turn the key 7 times and you will have 7 different meanings of the zodiac. And Subbarao has given only one meaning. He says that the zodiac represents, in a much higher sense, the whole evolution of the universe. Evolution of the universe starting from the unknown to the present universe as we see with all its 5 elements and whatever it is. Of course, what do we know of zodiac if we turn to exoteric astrology? Well, you are born under the sign Aries, means you are very impulsive, energetic, this, that and the other. If you are Leo, you are very proud. It just stops at the characteristics, idiosyncrasies of a person. Whereas here, even giving for one turn to the key, he says, it tells you about the whole evolution of the universe. And we'll just take it one or two things. It's a very difficult article. But the first thing he says is, like, if you take, for example, Aries, Ram, Mesha, then its other name is Aja. Aja means unborn, self-existent, and that represents Parabrahma. Everything has come from that Parabrahma or one reality. Then there is the Taurus or the bull, and that represents the Pranava or Om. Then he goes on that Gemini, the twins, that is male and female, that is the androgyn, Adam Kadmon, something really very difficult for us to understand. Then he comes to Virgin, you know, the Kanya Rashi as we call it, the Virgo, that is representative of Shakti. And there are six Shaktis, the Mantrika Shakti, the Ichha Shakti, Kriya Shakti. Then you come to Aquarius, it represents the 14 Lokas and so on. You know, it's a very wonderful article, totally in a different perspective it puts, even if you take these 12 signs of the zodiac. Then there is this other thing, as we said, that astrology is not just concerned with the physical or the personality of man, but there is also astrology which is of the individuality in man. There's something in us which is not perishable, which is going from one life to the other, which we call as the soul, the ego, or the reincarnating ego, or the individuality, which remains the same from life to life. And as we refer to Plato saying that there are the planetary gods from which the souls have incarnated and to which they go back, something similar you find in the last quotation where HPB says, "The star under which a human entity is born, says the occult teaching, will remain forever its star throughout the whole cycle of its incarnations in one manvantara. But this is not his astrological star. The latter is concerned and connected with personality, the former with individuality." That there are 7 hierarchy of divine beings. Just last Sunday we saw much more in detail about how there is the hierarchy of intelligent beings governing the universe, and that the soul, each soul is derived from one of these hierarchies, and it is that star. At the head of the hierarchy there is a being which we call as Dhyani Buddha, and that is what is referred to as star. And it is said that once the human being perfects himself, at the last initiation he comes face to face with this star or the Dhyani Buddha or the Ogoides, as it is called. It may sound a little complex, but it is much better to have the larger perspective of what this astrology that we are talking about. Now, to conclude, therefore, we can see that shall we then be, say, interested in finding out our future going by the astrological predictions or not? Well, theosophy will only have to advise that, after all, what they are doing is not telling you just the result of the causes which you have yourself, say, brought about or given rise to in the previous lives. So, why not accept the things which come to you under karmic law? Why should you know beforehand, as that man, that you are going to break your leg or break your neck or what is going to happen? Why not just trust the law of karma, that whatever comes to me, it is my own doing? And why should I want to know whether it is a good thing or bad thing? Let it come. And if we do that, we are completely determined, and we don't want to do that. As Alan Leo, who used to be a student of theosophy, has written several books on astrology, he says that it's not required that if you are born under a particular sun sign, suppose say it is Aquarius, then they say that they are very eccentric, or if it is Leo, they are very proud. he says, why should you accept that and therefore go on living your life being proud, being eccentric? Why not make a change? We said that man has a free will. So even using that free will, at least these traits he can change. He need not conform to astrology and go on being what is predicted for him and be called that you are a typical Leo, you are a typical Aquarian. Why? You can change it. And therefore, as Mr. Crosby said, says in that quotation, that we make it possible, we make another kind of birth possible. That if we change whatever comes to us now, make best use of it as a raw material, we can make a different kind of birth, a better birth possible, rather than getting, swimming with whatever is coming. Now, that pink leaflet, this is what is we have quoted, that should we try to know our future? Well, the danger of trying to find out what is to happen in the future in more or less detail is that we tend to live in hopes or fears of the future and become slothful of the present. We tend to take the negative attitude of life instead of using that knowledge we have as a mariner uses the stars to guide his course. The secret knowledge of the science of astrology is still secret and very, very few possess it. Some time for questions.